Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
And welcome to the web show on the British Tech Network. I'm here this evening with a fantastic panel to discuss all things analytics, data, tagging, and all the stuff under the hood that a lot of people are quite afraid of, frankly. So hopefully we'll kind of take away some of the magic and the mystery around analytics tonight, and everybody should be able to jump in following this episode and have a look at some of the stats on the website. The panel I have pulled together tonight is cross-continent. We have a couple of guests in from the States and two in from the UK. So I'll start on the panel. First of all, we have Jeremy Beeger, who is the founder and CEO of UberTags. Jeremy, how are you this evening?
Very good, thank you.
Good, good. Is it, well, actually, it's not this evening for me. I always do that when I've got international guests on, and then they tell me, oh, no, it's actually a beautiful sunny morning or something like that.
It's approaching evening in New York.
Oh, it is. Oh, of course, yes, yes. Grant, have you had a good day today?
Yeah, so far so good. Thank you.
Good, good. That's great. And next, we have Simon Robinson, who is the sales director for Session Cam in the UK. Simon, how are you?
Good evening. Hi there. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, have you? How has your week been so far?
Absolutely manic and brilliant at the same time. I have delivered magic this week.
Well, there can't possibly be a bad week when you've delivered magic.
More on that later.
Very good, very good. And next we have Caleb Whitmore, who is the founder and principal consultant at Analytics Pros. Caleb, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm out in Seattle, Washington, on the west coast of the United States, and currently sitting on a plastic folding chair in our new offices. Have yet to actually get built out. So,
oh, wow.
Light startup digs this week.
Very good, very good. Oh, well, very good. And has your week been busy with a move then?
No, not so much a move. We're waiting for the contractors. Everybody loves working with contractors and construction, I expect, and we're doing a lot of waiting on them. So this week it's just been busy working.
Very good, very good. And finally, we have Matthew Curry. Now, I was going to say who you are, but I quickly checked your Twitter bio, and frankly, the title that you've got in there is slightly better than what I was going to say. So, you are the general go-to guy for sex toy statistics.
That is correct.
Fantastic.
Anything you'd like to know.
More accurately, Matt is the head of e-commerce at the Love Honey Group, which they are in the sex toy industry, so I'm assuming that's where that connection comes from. Or is it just your free time? That isn't it.
Well, you know, on weekends when I'm bored.
Very good. And how has your week been?
Busy as well. I have literally just come from a rehearsal of a play that I'm in.
All right, okay.
So you're running around like a mad person, and it's incredibly busy at work as well. You know, people are staying in more.
Yes, yes. Very good, very good. So jumping straight into the topic this evening, we've already discussed that we are talking about web analytics tonight. So, as you know, web analytics is the measurement, collection, analysis, and reporting of internet data for purposes of understanding and optimizing web usage. So, for starters, why should you do this? What's the benefit?
Okay, so fundamentally, if you cannot monitor what your website is doing, then you have no hope of improving it. Fundamentally, that is why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. So we're collecting all this data, and we're then using whatever tool we have at hand to figure out what is going wrong, what is going right, and hopefully that tool will then say, well, you know, if you focus on these four things, then you will make more of whatever it is that you intend to make.
Yes,
I think the crux of why we do it is to make the site better for yourselves and for your customers, and there's a cunning balance there between the two.
Yeah, and there's also a reporting from the point of view of higher ups, I suppose, as well. I mean, I come across that quite often, that we use it, kind of the guys on the ground, if you like, to improve the site and to make the site better. But senior managers and things like that are just really interested in the numbers at the end of the day. So it's a reporting tool for metrics for senior managers as well. Would you agree?
I'm not actually too certain about that. I mean, if you're running an e-commerce website, you should never trust your analytics tool to give you a monetary value. on anything, because most of these things are cookie-based tools, and that can have all sorts of error margins associated with it. You know, you whatever tool you have will have a proper financial system, and that is what the higher-ups should be looking at. Yes, you can say, well, we had so many visitors, or hits, which is an awful term that no one should ever use. And you know, they'll all nod and go, yes, that's very nice. But really, they're interested in the financial system.
So the actual report that comes out at the end that says exactly how many of item A you've shipped last week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that I can completely agree with that, that managers are most important or most concerned with the business, whatever that business is, whether it's to make money or to gather donations or to drive leads or simply you know, serve your customer base or your constituent base. At the end of the day, upper managers are going to be most concerned with that. I think that the data is more what the day-to-day developers, marketers, marketing managers and site managers, application developers should be using to guide their decisions. Otherwise, it's just my opinion and your opinion and what we think it should look like. And absent of anything that says this is better or this is worse, this is the direction to go. And if you go in the good direction consistently, then those numbers that the managers really care about will get better with time.
Okay, so there's that side of it. But again, another thing, could it be about cost per acquisition? So is that something else that you could look at? Because we're kind of talking about here around improving the website, as in this section of the website doesn't work because we're getting drop off or something like that here. But there is also an element of how many clicks is this particular banner ad getting? And how many clicks am I getting through SEO, for example, yeah?
Exactly. I mean, analytics is there to help you measure the efficacy of all of your marketing attractions and your affiliate partners, absolutely everything. It's only with the use of you know, a measurement system, an analytics system, that allows you to compare which is the most profitable attraction channel for your sites. And that is one of the most important things. One of the other really important things that managers are aware of today is the customer satisfaction or the customer feedback from your site as well, and you know, that certainly comes into the mix.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of other tools out there that'll do that. So we are talking about analytics predominantly on this show, but I suppose we should give a nod to some of the other tools that you can put onto it, such as multivariate testing. There are tools. I'm not actually sure. Sorry, ServiceTick sits in what category? Because it's not. What kind of tool would you record? Would you suggest that was?
Yeah, I mean, the session cam tool, we actually record and replay sessions. Yeah. So we augment analytics tools. We augment everything from Google Analytics all the way through to Site Catalyst by allowing people to filter sessions, replay those sessions, and alert on those sessions right down to the field level. So in essence, it is an analytics tool, but it's not a replacement for web analytics.
Yeah, it's just another tool in the arsenal of the analytics team. But there's much of other things. So we've got multivariate testing, we've got some kind of session recording, we've got some kind of market and traffic monitor, such as Atlas or DoubleClick or something like that. And then we have the core analytics package as well. What other things could you possibly use to monitor the site and get information off the site?
One of the other, I think, most important things and often overlooked is a class of tools that look at the voice of customer. I don't like to say the word survey because people start to think surveys with lots of questions, but voice of customer tools that are very simple, like 4Q Survey or Kiss Insights, which I think got bought and is now some other horribly named product. But these are tools that make it really easy to get what the customer says or is thinking. It's the qualitative side of data, as opposed to what an analytics tool like Google Analytics can deliver, the quantitative story of what happened. But figuring out the why is really hard. So tools like Session Cam or other kinds of session recording tools can be really helpful for getting an insight into what the visitor is doing. But I love the voice of customer tool because it allows us to actually hear what the customer is thinking. Why did you come here? What did you want to do? Could you do it? And are you happy? And if you answer those questions, you're going to have a much better insight into what's going on with your site and how to make it better.
Do you find with those kind of tools, though, that you predominantly get the negativity. So, for example, am I more likely to complain or am I more likely to commend? So if I end up having a really bad experience with you, certainly myself, I'm more likely to moan about it than I am to fill in a form to say that was fantastic. Is that a concern, and how do you get around that concern?
That is absolutely a concern. The solution to that really rests, I believe, in the methodology behind the tool. So not to champion one tool, although I do believe this is a great one, but the 4Q survey tool, that methodology and tools like this do an initial invitation. So before the user has a chance to develop a bias, I like you, I don't like you, my experience is good or bad, you invite them to participate. You say, welcome to our site. When you're all done, would you like to tell us about your experience? Mm-hmm. And then people, 98-99% of them will say, no, I don't, get out of my face, let me go on my way and do what I want to do. But some would say, sure, I'd be happy to tell you about it. And then they click yes and it goes away. And they don't generally think about it anymore until they're done. So let's take the user that's has a wonderful experience. They say, yes, I'll tell you about it. They get all done. It comes back and says, great, tell us about your experience. Could you do what you wanted to do? Are you happy? Thanks very much. And so you get positive feedback. For the user that had a bad experience, they're frustrated, they're finally leaving, they're upset, they couldn't do what they wanted to do, and now you get to say, hey, how was that experience? Could you do what you wanted to do? Are you upset or not? Are you happy? And what are your thoughts? Tell us what went wrong or what went right. And that's a very successful methodology to approach doing this. Not the only way, but I found that's a very, very good one. Okay. The other route of the little plus button floating somewhere on the page or tell us what you're thinking, that's a complaint capture tool, which isn't bad to have, but a tool that asks initially before a bias is developed, I think is a tool that will yield a much more interesting set of data because you do capture the complete picture of people. And it doesn't generally skew very heavily to negativity. In fact, satisfaction scores will generally, if your site is relatively satisfying, people are going to tell you that. And that's what I've seen. On a scale of 5, it's often a 3.5 or a 4 and not a 2 because it's just the upset people. You generally get mostly happy people, in fact.
Okay. So how do I go about convincing the higher-ups to invest in some of these tools? What would you say is the top three reasons that I should take up to my senior management to invest?
I think in the case of e-commerce, it's pretty easy to make a business case based on driving the conversion rate or the average basket size, and analytics is a key tool that can help you do that. I think it gets a little tougher when what you're trying to optimize is a little bit more qualitative, like customer experience, where senior management might believe at some level that there's a financial benefit, but it's much tougher to quantify.
I think the financial benefit of customer experience is the retention of customers, and that is definitely measurable and provable. So I think building a business case around improved customer experience is still viable because it is provable in terms of customer retention.
Yeah, I assume the company has some kind of average cost per person retained. You can quite easily put together a business case for that, I suppose, as well. But that's kind of looking at the analytics tools. But some of these kind of different ones, so like multivariate testing tools, survey tools, recording tools and things like that, it just becomes a little bit grayer to try and put a cost and return to those, doesn't it?
I would disagree.
If I could answer that.
Yeah.
The return on investment on customer experience measures are essentially, the retention of those important customers. The optimization of the e-commerce funnel is not just about analytics. Understanding the why behind the what, the why behind the hard measures that you have in a funnel is a really, really tricky thing to do. And using survey tools, MVT tools, and session replay tools is often the key to doing that. So they're another piece of the puzzle. They're not the answer to everything. They're another piece to the puzzle.
Okay.
And I would say multivariate testing tools in particular are amazing tools at getting buy-in because it's so clear the conversion rate lift, the actionability of the learnings from a multivariate test are so clear and so instant that it far easier to sell in than analytics.
I'd agree with that, but I have heard multivariate testing. I have seen some great multivariate testing happening in practice and some great wins. But I've also heard multivariate testing referred to as producing the least worst version of your site for the majority.
That's a fair point. That's a very good point. It has everything to do with the test, not the tool. It has to do with asking questions that actually make a difference. Mm-hmm. It can actually drive a big enough change versus something very minor like the color of blue of a button.
Yeah, yeah.
But you would never. I mean, this is this slightly apocryphal story of what is it, Google testing 500 shades of blue, and you know, fundamentally the color, the you know, particular shade of blue of a button is not going to do much, and you would have to run that test for years, pretty much, to get a statistically significant result on the uplift of conversion. And one of the things that I'm worried about is how the MVT is slightly being sold as a magic bullet in some organizations. You know, MVT in practice takes time. It takes an awful lot of time and an awful lot of patience. And people will kind of run one MVT test. They won't bake it off. They won't kind of double blind it. And they'll just go with that result because the tool says, well, that's 95% confident of being a winner. And, you know, I run AAA, BBB tests on my two successful outcomes of an MVT test just to be sure. And, you know, that can add another, you know, 3-4 weeks onto the end of a test. And I don't think that a lot of organizations properly understand what their MVT tool is telling them. They're just going with whatever kind of gets the crown at the end of the test.
Yeah, and certainly some MVT providers that I've come across in the past, that is kind of how they sell it. As they look as a magic bullet, as you say. You know, you take what the commercial team want to do, what the marketing team want to do, what the business wants to do, or the higher ups, I should say. You put the three of them in, whoever wins, that's who wins, and that's the end of it.
Yes.
And no, you're completely right. It shouldn't be like that at all. You should be making 100% sure. And I think as well, another risk with the MVT is that there isn't ever a winner as such, because whatever does win, in quotes, might not win next week for a completely different group of users that happen to be coming to your site. It just happened to be, you know, you should always be continuously improving and continuously
absolutely
testing.
People don't seem to realize that there are trends to their traffic, and there are flows and ebbs. You know, people act differently just after payday. They act differently just before payday. You know, everyone knows that Friday nights and Saturdays are dead times in terms of e-commerce, and so you have to run any test for at least a month so that you can understand all the different types of time-relevant traffic you get. You can't just run a test for a couple of weeks and think, well, that's the answer.
Mm-hmm. Which also circles back to the idea of testing something stupid like the color of a button, which is basically there's a huge opportunity cost. If you have to run a test for a month, that means you're running a maximum of 12 tests in a year. And if you're wasting one of those months testing something stupid, that's a big wasted opportunity.
Yeah,
definitely.
I would create some controversy there, though. I have had double-digit improvements in conversion rates from button color. It's not a myth. Not that the button is the only thing you should ever test, but...
You could have had triple-digit changes from testing something that actually matters and drives behavior.
That's true. The pragmatic approach is one that uses the data to speak to what you should test. And you'll start with your web analytics data set, get some voice of customer data, maybe some screen capture type of tool to help you really understand where are the biggest problems, and then do some basic math. If we fix this problem, what's the impact on the potential impact on total conversions? And you usually want to start at the bottom of your funnel and work up towards the top. And buttons usually aren't at the bottom, unless it's like a button on the checkout page that doesn't work, which I have literally seen cost companies millions of dollars in revenue a month, just because the button on their final confirmation wasn't as good as it could be.
Just to explain, we've used the word conversion a few times here, and for our listener who doesn't understand what we're referring to as conversion, basically what we're saying there is somebody who arrives on your site and ultimately purchases or subscribes to your newsletter or does the kind of the main action that you want them to do on the website. That's what we're referring to as a conversion.
There's this term, conversion rate optimization, which is wrong. Fundamentally, people say, I'll do this test and I'll massively increase your conversion rate. And, I can increase my conversion rate easy. I'll just hold a sale. What people should be actually using as their core metric is the net customer lifetime value. So with whatever version of your variant you are testing, does it also then mean people are coming back? Are they spending more in each session? The actual conversion rate is, secondary. What you should be looking at is kind of revenue per visit as your key metric and optimizing on that.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And for net customer lifetime value, you need happy customers and you need returning customers. It's not just about converting that session on that day for that one person and maybe never seeing them again.
So not to create controversy, I actually agree 100%. But except for the fact that I don't.
Okay.
So the deal is that in theory, you want to maximize lifetime customer value. The truth is that doing that with optimizing a web page is very difficult to do because a single web page and a single session is one touch point on a long journey of touch points over a period of months or years.
Yes.
And you're not at any given point optimizing the whole experience. So you need to optimize what you control today and just not be stupid about only thinking short term.
Okay, so based on all that, and all that healthy discussion there, we've convinced our stakeholders to procure or install some kind of solution or many solutions. So just very briefly before we get back to what analytics actually means and what some of the data sets mean, just going to quickly touch on the implementation of it and some of the tools that are available out there. So obviously we've got a few people here who have got who actually work for companies who provide some of these tools. So we'll cover some of those as well. But to get analytics work on your website or any of these tools, it requires actually popping a tag on the page and querying server logs as well. Is there another way, or is it just basically a JavaScript tag or server logs?
I can't remember what it's called, but there's some tool that kind of sits in between the internet and your web servers that kind of inspects the traffic and records it all that way.
That would be IP flow mirroring from some kind of agent on the, on the servers, yeah.
So is that the kind of thing that Hitwise and Experian in the UK use? Is that these are similar kind of thing?
In a way, yeah. Yes.
Right, okay, yes, I know. So let's just say we're going for the tagging solution. So where do we start? What do we do?
Put tag in header.
Now, that's interesting. Is it the header?
Call Jeremy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's easy. You implement Uber tags.
Yes, well, actually, okay. I'll come to Uber tags in a second, and I'll come to tagging containers because that is important. But just quickly, you mentioned the head of the page there. Why would you put in the head and not the footer of the page?
Mostly because that's what Google tells you to. I've done it before where I thought, we'll put it into the footer of the page so that's the last thing that gets loaded and so it doesn't slow down the experience for the visitor. But kind of since async, it doesn't massively matter. And if you put the GA tag in the footer of your page, you see all sorts of weird stuff nowadays. I've had it in the past where kind of 50% of my e-commerce transactions weren't registering in GA because essentially what was happening was the code was in the footer of the page. The page was loading, but the visitor was going somewhere else before that tagging code was called. Given the sort of website that I sell, people want to, get off of it pretty quickly. And so yes, this was happening. And so definitely put it into the header. Otherwise, you can't really trust the traffic data that you're getting.
It's so, so important to do that. If I can shamelessly plug my blog, I actually just wrote a post on this in my blog week or two ago at analyticspros.com.
We can put the link in the show notes, so...
It's an issue that I get asked about all the time. And the case I used in my blog post was an extreme one where I think it was a 300% difference in traffic. I was just actually working today on an issue for a client where they launched a new version of their website in August and they don't trust their data anymore because all their numbers changed. Their visits went up, their bounce rates changed, their page views changed, and they think something's broken. And we've gone through and audited top to bottom, and the only thing we can put our finger on is you moved your tag from the bottom to the top of the page, and you're now getting the accurate picture that you have not had for the last 3 years. You've been under-reporting your data. Wow. And Google Analytics, in particular, is very sensitive to this. If you don't get that tag firing or running quickly, you can really have some nasty effects on your data. Your traffic source reports are liable to not be accurate. Your bounce rates won't be accurate. Your time on site and pages per visit can all start to report incorrectly. And e-commerce is another great area where if the tag is at the bottom and somebody leaves the thank you page very quickly, you don't see the conversion. So you think your conversion rate is lower than it really is. So this is an area that I think is absolutely direly critical to this whole idea of measurement. And it's one that I still see every day, tags in the footer. Biggest argument, what if Google breaks? And I always say, if your website is still standing and Google is broken, then that will be really amazing. But most likely, if people can't reach Google servers, they haven't been on your website for a long time before that.
Okay, so put in the header then, I suppose is what we're saying there. Definitely put your tag in the header, whatever you're doing. Now, you could put a number of tags on the page. All the tools that we've talked about here, your MVT testing, it is vitally important, actually, with MVT testing that you put in the header of the page, because if you put in the footer of the page, then you will actually notice a page flicker while whatever test happens to kick in because the rest of the page elements have loaded. But I suppose we can talk about that later in got MVT testing episode coming up. So, but... Well, that having all those tags on the page is going to increase page weight. It's going to ultimately increase the time it takes to load. So we could use some kind of container tag solution. And so we actually have someone in the panel who's an expert in this kind of field. So I will pass over to Jeremy. Can you just explain why you should use a container tag? What are the benefits of using a container tag?
Sure. So some of the biggest reasons we hear companies want to implement a tag management system are that, one, it takes their development team a very long time to launch a new tag or to make a change to an existing tag, on the order of weeks, or if you're in a very big company, even months, to make a very, very simple change. The second reason is that many of the tags are what's called blocking tags, which means the entire tag has to execute from end to end, and the browser stops doing everything else while that tag is loading and executing. And so you run into this very serial process where one tag fully loads, then the next, then the next. And that's why you have this very big driver of load time, which can drastically impact your customer experience and your conversion rate. And so what many tag management systems do is they have technology to actually load the tags in parallel so that you're not waiting such a long time for the tags to load, and they allow you to bypass the whole IT process and launch a tag via browser instead of going through the typical IT process. So those are the real reasons that you would need a tag management system, but it really only comes into play when you start to have more and more tags or start to have a more and more formal release process where it becomes tougher to be agile in terms of trying new vendors and trying new things that are going to drive your conversion rate on your site.
So that's the two options, basically. So you put the tag in your page in the header, or in a scenario where you've maybe got quite a lengthy change process or a number of tags, you would then look at some kind of container solution as well. So what are some of the tools out there? So we obviously, in terms of container tags, there's obviously Uber tags. There are you've got Site Tagger, Tagman, a number of other ones. We could put some links in the show notes. In terms of analytics packages, we've talked a lot about Google Analytics. But is there any other ones that you would highly recommend?
I think Kissmetrics has a very interesting approach, which sort of turns the idea of aggregate analytics on its side and starts giving you the individual level analytics.
Mm-hmm. It's an odd market still. Kissmetrics, actually, yes, very much so, because it's quite a non-traditional tool. I mean, you've got the big guys. So you've got your Omniture, Scicatalyst, Core Metrics, Web Trends, and you've got things like DC Storm and all sorts of bits. And Urchin, which is pre-Google Analytics, still does exist to some extent. And there's also Google Analytics Premium, which you pay, I think, £150,000 a year for. But most of the big guys, they have all sorts of other tools that kind of plug into their kind of suites. And so, you know, with Omniture, you've also got their test and target MVT tool, and yeah, there's all sorts. But actually trying to differentiate them against GA is actually quite hard. And a lot of the analytics vendors are kind of bolting weird stuff onto their tools now to try and differentiate. So you'll see all sorts of, multi-channel attribution was kind of a big thing. And then GA started to do that. And then it was like social monitoring, and they've started buying up different kind of social monitoring tools. But in terms of, right, you know, why should I move away from GA? It's mostly about ownership of data rather than functionality. GA can do pretty much most of what it's asked to do, and you can do all sorts of things with custom events and custom variables. And custom variables can pretty much, you know, you can bend GA to your will with custom variables. But it's really about the ownership of data. You know, Google owns your data when you use GA. And, you know, it can go down and there's no, you know, SLAs or anything. So if you are of that sort of company where you have to have ownership, and I know certainly in Germany it's a big issue, then there is this kind of GA premium version that you can go with.
Points that I would add there. Mm-hmm. The GA premium product is that's $150,000. It's less in pounds, given the conversion rate. Another thing I actually would clarify, Google does not own your data. They have never said they own your data. And the terms of services have always been very clear that you own your data for both the standard free version and as well as the premium version. That said, I've had many, many, many discussions with legal departments at organizations who just don't take it at face value that Google says you own your data unless there's a contract with Inc. And that's a really good reason to go purchase the premium product. In Germany, there are some very specific legal requirements for the data protection authority there. But again, Google actually has a specific process that you can go through to be compliant, and has had code that you can add to your Google Analytics tag for years now that helps Google Analytics to conform to the German data protection authority's requirements.
Do you know what those requirements are?
Well, yeah, so the main issue that's come up in Germany is that there is a regulation that is interpreted to say you can't retain IP addresses. And Google Analytics does not retain IP addresses, but the German authority apparently interprets it that they do retain IP addresses because they actually are collected by the server, and they are used in the process of determining geographic location and network service provider name. But the IP address has never been exposed in Google Analytics. It's always been explicitly called out as not something that you should or could put into Google Analytics. But in Germany, apparently, it's a bit of a sticky situation, and the way to navigate it is a function on Google Analytics tags that anonymizes the IP address, which reduces your geographic accuracy a little bit, but not much. And that, plus a special contract that you can get from Google, makes the German authorities apparently perfectly happy with what's going on. So that's an issue that's tough to navigate, but every provider has had some challenges with some of the regulations that are coming or have come into the market.
That actually raises a question that I've had for ages, and I have asked people at Google with no real answer, which is this famous gray area in the terms of service about linking up a GA visit or session or whatever with a CRM system. So, you know, we can, once a user comes onto their site and they're logged in, we know their customer number. So theoretically, I could pass that customer number in as a custom variable and then allow me to track their repeat purchases in GA. So doable, but there is this weird line in the terms of service that you can't do anything that identifies a single user within Google Analytics. It is outside of the spirit of free analytics. And this was kind of the case for a few years, and I don't know if that has changed with the invention of GA Premium or not. Or, you know, with GA Premium, am I allowed to do that?
So I've been working with Google Analytics since the days of Urchin. You mentioned Urchin and Urchin previously. I was on the ground level launch of the product, one of the first certified partner companies, and seen this evolve over time. And you're absolutely right that the terms of service have stated, thou shalt not put any unique identifier or personal information into Google Analytics. So that is still the standard with the free version of the product. The premium version does contractually allow for that in very specific language. So the line that I recommend is, if you're at a level of business where that kind of granularity in your data, that level of unique customer insight is going to be useful to you, you have two challenges with Google Analytics. One, terms of service, which is a legal determination you need to make with your counsel as to where you want to decide to fall on that. And the second is, I think, a bit more pragmatic, scale. When you start measuring users uniquely with a unique user ID and a unique session ID, if you have any significant amount of traffic, the standard version of GA very quickly is going to stop being a good tool for you to use, given the way that its data sampling algorithms operate. And so those two conditions, I generally say, you know, if you need to go in that direction, if there's actual value there for you to do that, you have the analytical processes and the data warehouse, the people to make use of that kind of data, then you probably should already be looking at or using the premium version of Google Analytics, which says you can do that and also addresses the scale and the data sampling challenges with unsampled data access. If you're looking at an investment in a paid analytics solution, you have to look at that from a standpoint of what's the ROI. There's no free analytics. Even free Google Analytics still costs money unless you have people that work for free for you, because you still need people to use the tool, to implement the tool, to manage and maintain the tool. So whether you're Google Analytics or Site Catalyst or fill in the blank, there is an investment you need to make in data. And with the Google Analytics products, Premium is the product where you're investing in a tool to address some of these scale, contractual, SLA, excellent SLA with the Premium version, 50 custom variables, a lot of really exciting things. The opportunity also to get the support and the training that you would be paying for whether you're buying another tool or using the free version of GA. So I like to look at it as investment, and it's simply a number. If you invest $150,000 a year annually in your analytics program, and maybe you invest another $100,000 or $200,000 in some tag management technology and some voice of customer and some user experience analysis and some testing and optimization tools and services, if, let's say, you invest $300,000 and you earn $3 million or $30 million, that's a pretty positive equation. If you're a $500,000 a year business, you should definitely not go buy Google Analytics Premium. You have a lot of other things you should be doing with your money than investing it in an expensive program. You shouldn't buy any software. Yes. You should get smart people to help you and use free tools at that level.
Yep. Okay. So moving on from the actual purchase of the tool and what tools and things like that are available and things to think about when you're buying, once you've got the tool and you start kind of pulling some reports out of it, you are going to be faced with a list of metrics and titles of these metrics that you then have to mold and understand and then take some insight out of. So very quickly, if we can just go through some of what some of the metrics that you might be kind of faced with as soon as you open up an analytics package, and just very quickly what they can actually mean. So first of all, you will see a number which a lot of people like to quote as being the boogeyman of all metrics is the bounce rate. So what does the actual bounce rate mean?
It varies by tool.
Exactly.
Okay, so in the main, what does the bounce rate mean? Is it this evil stat that everybody should be watching on a second by second basis on their website?
It means very little in practical e-commerce. Fundamentally, I'm a visitor. I come to your site. I don't do anything, and I very quickly leave. So I have bounced. So I boing out of your website.
Yeah.
And so, you know, bounce rate is the percentage of your total visitors that do that experience. But there's all sorts of issues about the timing and whether other things have happened. And it's a very weird statistic that you really shouldn't pay super duper attention to. Yes, if it's like 70, 80%, you probably have an issue. But when it floats between 25 and 35, I really wouldn't be worried about it.
Yeah. Okay, so how does the bounce rate differ from the exit rate?
So the exit rate are people who are leaving your site on that page but have a history on your site of doing other things. It may not be visiting other pages, but it could be firing events or transactions or whatever. There isn't this bounce experience of just seeing one thing and then immediately leaving. You will have a big exit rate on your order confirmation page, for example.
Yeah. And I don't know how to pronounce the chap's name, but I think, Matt, you've listed him a few times in the Google Doc, the Digital Marketing and Measurement Model. He actually describes it in one of his books as a bounce rate is they came, they puked, they left.
Yes.
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 All visits have to end. All visits have an exit rate. I find the exit rate is a very useful metric in the context. So if people are exiting from your shopping cart, bad. If people are exiting from your thank you page, awesome. Mm-hmm. Bounce rate is a signal that has a lot of problems in how it's calculated, as mentioned, and that can be mitigated through A, understand your tool, read the definition of your tool so you know what it is, and B, make sure you're tracking things beyond the page view, like scrolling down the page or clicking on a downloadable file or an outbound link or a social media button, or maybe you have some flash or some script in your page that users can interact with. All of that interaction should be measured. And in Google Analytics, if you measure that interaction with events, event tracking, then your bounce rate will be decreased because somebody that sits on the page and clicks a couple of things wouldn't be measured as bouncing. Without that additional event tracking, they would appear as bouncing unless they went to a whole new page. And that's the most kind of tip of the iceberg. If you do one thing, do some event tracking, and your bounce rate is going to become a lot more useful and meaningful to you.
It's really important to make a distinction between your page visits with activity and page visits without activity. It gives you a very, very clear impression of how far people have progressed through that page. And that's absolutely critical to understanding why there's an exit on that page. So understanding the field, understanding the pinch point or the point of struggle on a page where a user has decided to exit. That's the absolutely critical point on a page.
Okay. So the next little grouping, and I'm going to use these as a group because they're all related to some degree or another. So a visit, a visitor, a unique, a hit, and a download. Gentlemen, try and discuss these.
Anything.
So why, I'm not going against you, I agree that it is nothing, but where does this come from? Why do we have this metric, a hit?
I think it is marketing departments liking things to sound more dynamic than they actually are.
Right, okay. So we'll dismiss hit then. So visit, visitor, unique, and download.
A visitor or unique, I would consider as the same thing. Most marketers and executives love the term unique, and what they're trying to refer to is people. So when we talk about uniques, or in many cases even hits, they say, oh, our site has a billion hits or a million hits. They actually are thinking about people when they say that. Unique or visitor really is a much better term for people, obviously, but this is where what we do is not so clear. It's really, in Google Analytics case and really any other tool, it's not a person, it's a cookie. Mm-hmm. And to the degree that cookies are deleted or rejected or not allowed, you're not tracking uniques or visitors. And that's a big challenge in our industry. Until a user signs in, you can't positively, absolutely identify them as a unique person. And so your uniques is a number that is wrong, but it's a number. And so we kind of have to take it at face value, is my opinion on that, that we take it as is, knowing that it's not actually accurate.
So in that scenario there, a person could generate one or two uniques if they've cleared their cookies in between time, but generally they would create one unique, but within that unique they could create half a dozen visits. Would that be accurate? And then they could also generate seven or eight downloads during that period. Yeah.
Yes.
Is that kind of what we're saying?
Absolutely.
So, in your opinion, and this is, I don't think this is going to have a right or wrong answer, but in your opinion, if you were going to be telling a listener to this show what they should be tracking as their definitive metric on eyeballs on their site, should they be looking at visits or should they be looking at uniques? Or is there not an answer to that? Is there reasons why we shouldn't be doing that?
They're different things. Yeah. Visitors will tell you ideas of reach. Visits will tell you ideas of engagement. Mm-hmm. Really, you know, I would like people to come back multiple times to my site over a month, please, because then they can read more stuff and I have more opportunity to sell to them. So ideally, both.
If I was on an island and I had to choose one, I would go with visits, because it's the less broken of the two. And it does give you something that's a bit more concrete, in that you know there was a person, maybe they've been here before, but here's what they did during their session, essentially. Think of it like shoppers that walk into your store. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I'd have both. That is absolutely a great insight that both are useful together as well.
Okay.
I think uniques becomes even more blurred when you start to consider multi-device browsing as well.
And
it is very, very important to understand uniques and how multi-device browsing affects uniques. And also how summing of uniques across days and weeks and months can sometimes be rolled up and aggregated or not by your analytics provider as well. And that's something quite important to drill down into when you're looking at analytics solutions, is the roll-up of uniques across time periods.
Yep.
Which is odd, because that's how advertising is sold nowadays. So it used to be impressions. And now you've noticed that pretty much every news website is just endless galleries to drive up impression rate. And so now you buy on uniques. So you say, right, I'll have a campaign for 2 weeks, and this site has X number of hundred thousands of uniques per day, which is an absolute nonsense figure half of the time, and it's massively inflated. So it's pretty unsurprising that it's the marketing or the advertising executive's favorite metric.
I think there's value too at reducing the number of metrics you look at. So when you start to get into, like, oftentimes you're saying, what should go in the denominator? Is it visits or visitors? And the truth is that you could look at both, but the truth is also that if you're running a business, there's only so many things you can actively focus on, and you just have to pick the metrics that matter the most and correlate with the other ones and go with it, try and optimize that. So in my business, we happen to use visits just because it's simple.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We also have page views, which very simply is the amount of pages consumed on your website, so the amount of pages clicked through.
Page views is pretty hard to get wrong, unless you put two tags. Again, for Google Analytics, if you put two tags on the page, it's not better. You're going to get double count. But otherwise, you really can't screw up page views. It's like hits. It's very straightforward.
Yeah.
One thing I do is a thing called virtual page views, however, yes. which is like events, but more useful because it appears in page flow reports in GA, where you essentially you make up a page that doesn't actually exist and fire a page view to GA upon click of an element to say that this virtual page has been viewed, which does increase your page views.
Okay. Segment.
Advanced segment.
Yeah.
So a segment is a subset of your visits or visitors, depending on what metrics or dimensions, in fact, you choose, filtered down to fit a very specific set of rules. So you could say, well, I want to see everyone new who has visited my site from a PPC link and has also visited this page. And so you define those rules, and then that bundles that up into a segment. And then you can, in any report, you can say, well, I only want to see the data for this particular segment.
Okay. Is there any other metrics that we've missed here? I know there is a lot of metrics we've missed here, but is there any other important metrics that somebody who's just kind of interested in implementing some kind of analytics solution should be thinking about that we haven't covered here?
Revenue.
and the rates. And looking at key rates.
So key rates as in how often somebody's visited or something like that, yeah?
Or conversion rates.
Purchase price over visits or conversion rates.
Gold rate. Gold average order value. All sorts.
Yeah, it does get slightly more complicated then, but these ones here are kind of key ones that you're starting with, because you can then these ones basically inform all the ones that you've listed there. So, for example, to get your conversion rate, you use visits, if that's what you choose to use, or visitors. To get your return on investment and things like that, you would actually still use visitors. So this is kind of your key ones, but then you can go on to use goals and things like that, funnels and whatnot in other analytics packages. To kind of take some of that and make it a little bit more advanced and segment it down. So
there's a super metric that most people don't know about in Google Analytics that was it was there, and then they took it away and they brought it back, and it's called page value. And if you have a goal, or you do e-commerce tracking or a goal with a goal value defined, you'll get this beautiful metric in your content report in Google Analytics. It's all the way over on the right-hand side, called page value, which is a combination of revenue or goal value as it relates to pages people viewed. And what this number does, it's this magical number that makes your content that's bad stand out and your content that's good stand out. Because good content that's more frequently viewed by visitors and visits that do goals or convert in your store are going to have higher page values. And pages that are viewed by people who don't do those things are going to have lower page values. It's one of, I think, the best metrics in Google Analytics, and I almost never hear it talked about. So I just had to...
Do you ever have problems making it actionable, though? Because when it was in GA, and now it's back, I always found it very difficult to interpret, because it depended on where the page was in the funnel, and it seemed that the value seemed so massively correlated to where it was in the funnel. So, you know, yes, of course, a product page is going to have a higher value than some kind of nebulous page further up. And so it was very difficult to say, right, well, okay, my page, this particular product page is worth $1.50, or but this other page is worth $1.30. And I always found it difficult to say, right, well, do I need to change that product? Do I need to change the product page? Or, you know, but surely I have to work from the top of my funnel. And I always found it a bit weird to work with.
Yeah, it is challenging in that, you know, if you were to sort the page value, your most valuable page is going to be your thank you page, and it will match your average order value in your commerce reports. The way to use the metric that I found to be most productive is to compare types of pages to each other. So rather than saying Is my product page more valuable than my cart page? Well, your cart is closer to conversion, so it is going to be more valuable. But comparing product pages, is it product A or product B or product C? Or better yet, fire virtual page views for different types of actions. So let's say you have an image magnifier and you have image thumbnails. Fire a page view for each one. And virtual page view 1 is going to say image magnifier, and virtual page view 2 is going to be image thumbnails. And then look at the page value comparison and see what the comparison is between those two. So, you know, if you take all your pages and line them up, it is less useful. But if you're looking at two similar things and wanting to know is A or B better, it's really useful for that. You can also do content or types of content. So, you know, are videos better than pictures? Well, do a virtual page view for viewing a video or for viewing a picture, and then look at your page value for that type of content and see how they compare. I find that is the most productive way to use that metric.
Okay. And so now, if I now want to find out more about this topic, where would I go? Can you recommend some books or blogs or community groups or anything like that that people should check out? We could put all links that you mentioned here in the show notes so listeners don't have to worry about scribbling these down quickly. So you suggest anywhere that would be the best place for them to go?
I think the number one place is going to be Occam's Razor, isn't it?
Yes.
I would shamelessly put forth a few books here. I co-authored a book with Justin Catroni a couple of years ago called Performance Marketing with Google Analytics. Screenshots in print are not timeless. It's now just a couple of years later, outdated as far as screenshots go. But there really is years of Google Analytics consulting knowledge that we poured into the content of that book, and it still is quite good. I also favor Brian Clifton's book, Advanced yes. Web Metrics with Google Analytics. That's an excellent resource. Justin Catroni's latest book, Google Analytics, also an excellent resource. I also find that far too few people actually use the Google Analytics developer site. So there's the Help Center for Google Analytics, which is not very good. Let's put it kindly like that. And then there's the developer site, which is this treasured resource if you're semi to very technical, of very clear information about exactly how Google Analytics works. And that is an absolutely fantastic resource if you're a developer, implementer, or fairly technical. And then the last resource I love is the free videos Google has. Did you know Google has hours of free videos for the Conversion University exam that you can go watch on demand? And that's a great place to start. You can watch through them, rewatch them, and the most important thing in learning Google Analytics, which is kind of the area I do the most work in, is practice or actually doing it. You're going to learn things, but you have to keep doing it. Even when I don't go and do some types of analysis for a few weeks, I go back and I scratch my head and I think, how do I do this? What was I doing last time I did this? And I've been doing this for seven years. So frequency of use is very important in kind of keeping your skills sharp.
Okay.
Can I mention a conference? For Google Analytics users, again, there's a great resource that's starting to kind of come up all over the world of user conferences for Google Analytics. There are several now happening throughout the world. I founded the Gauge Conference series, and we run in the United States in the West Coast in San Francisco and East Coast. Our next conference is coming up in Boston in 2 weeks, beginning of October. And there's a Google Analytics user conference in Australia. There are several in South America coming up. There's usually two or three a year in Europe, Northern Europe. And so those are great resources if you're a Google Analytics user as well to go and meet other Google Analytics users, meet folks from Google, and get to learn more deeply about the product.
Great. Okay, we'll put some of those links in the show notes. It was good. Okay, we'll just take a short break before we go into listener questions. So the web show, the web show is sponsored by Pusher this week. This section of the web show. If you're developing or thinking of developing a web or mobile app that has live updating content, activity streams, chat, real time blogging, second screen apps, multiplayer games, and much more, then you need Pusher. Now I was speaking to the guys at Pusher today. I'm just telling them about the show that we're recording tonight. And they told me about a tool that I hadn't heard of before, so maybe you guys have heard about it. And it's called Gauges, G-A-U-G.E-S. And basically what it is these guys have pulled together a web analytics solution using the Pusher tool, so the real-time tool. And I was playing with it this afternoon, and I'm quite impressed. It basically looks very similar to the real-time stats that you get from Google Analytics, but frankly, it's prettier because Google, you know, Google's known for their user experience and the user interface design. But Gauges actually is a lovely site. You can go there and you get a 7 days free trial. But what I'd encourage you to do is if you go across to the BritishTechNetwork.com, click on the sponsor section and then click on the Pusher link, just so that we know that we sent you to them, all of our click-throughs really count there. And then when you're on there, if you go to the tutorial section, you should be able to come across the case study they've done around Gauges. It's really interesting what they've done there. Throw a 7-day free trial on your site for Gauges, and you can see how Pusher actually works there. Live updating content onto your site. It can actually see the people clicking through onto your site who's looking at your website. It actually has a really nice, it's called Air Traffic Live, and it's basically a map of the world. So if you put out a blog post or something like that's getting a lot of traffic, you can actually just have that web page open, and in real time, you can see pins drop all over the planet of where people are actually coming at your site. It's the power of Pusher. If you head over to the BritishTechNetwork.com, as I said, click on the Pusher link, you can get a 3-month free trial there, and if you just pop in the voucher code webshow_bootstrap, you can then claim a 3-month free Bootstrap plan once you've finished having a look at the free trial there, the free sandbox plan. But I'm going to have a little shop with these Gauges actually and just kind of see the power behind Pusher. So I'd like to thank Pusher for sponsoring the web show on the British Tech Network. They sponsor us, and we'd like you to sponsor them. I'd like you to support them as well. So moving on now, swiftly. We're a little bit over time tonight, so we're going to try and get through this bit a little bit quickly. So listener questions now. So this is the section of the show where you, the listener, sends in a question relating to whatever topic we happen to be talking about this week. So because we're in analytics this week, most of these questions are relating around analytics. So the first one here is from Andrew Walker. I have a lot of links on my homepage that go off to other URLs. This is showing a huge bounce rate on my homepage. Is there a way I can tell my analytics, Google Analytics, that there are internal links and therefore not a bounce? How could you go about doing that?
There's the really easy way, or excuse me, the really hard way, which is to find every outbound link and insert a HTML on-click tag into it to do event tracking. There's the really easy way. Two free tools, one of which is a tool that I made, full disclosure, Analytics Engine. You can go to analyticsengine.net for free. Line of code that you put onto your site, and it will track all of your outbound, your download, and your email mailed to clicks. Another tool similar to this is called SkyGlue. I have no involvement with it. Their tool also is quite useful. I think the name is skyglue.com, skyglue.com. Pretty nifty tool as well, and it can do some other kinds of tracking beyond just outbound or download link clicks. Hard coding your tracking calls is a lot of work, so I would definitely recommend finding a tool that can do it. If you're handy with jQuery, you can also write jQuery code that would automatically detect those outbound link clicks and track them into Google Analytics.
That's Grant. Okay. That was an easy answer there. The next one we've already covered in the show, but I'll just give you a mention. Ian Sanders, should my tags be at the top of the page or at the bottom there? I think we've covered that already, so we're not going to go into that, but thank you very much for emailing in, Ian. The next question from Gordon Elliott. I understand that location in stats is based on ISP location rather than the users themselves. What can I do to get actual locations of users?
Get them to register.
Yes.
Right.
You can't derive where they are, not with any degree of accuracy.
Okay. So the only way really to do that is to have some kind of login or something like that where there's no accuracy in that, I suppose, because the customer could say that they live in Timbuktu, so they're not giving you any marketing channels or anything
like
that.
I'm sure there's some fancy HTML5 GPS-y thing you can do, but you can't do anything in GA, or most geolocation services aren't super duper accurate.
I did see quite an interesting tool a few years ago. I was demoed to by a company, I think they were called Ad Insight, and it wasn't location services necessarily for web users, but what they did was they put up unique phone numbers on pages so that when customers went to the call center, and that was the idea, it was tracking the call center traffic. But then in your real-time analytics, it actually showed the exact location that they were dialing from at that time, which was quite cool. Yeah, but unfortunately, it only worked if the customer chose to go onto the phone. So you couldn't really hope for that because really you failed as well. As a user experience person or something like that, you failed if you've ended up going to the phone call. But never mind. It was very
cool. Our website caller.
It was very cool. They actually demoed it real time in there and actually had the real time stats up on the screen and the chap phoned from the landline phone number in the conference room. It was quite impressive. Anyway. The next one from Sylvia Rhea. In Google Analytics, is there a way to get historical data once a goal is set up?
No, I'm really sorry. And I know it's such a pain. And so, you know, especially if you're doing a really complicated goal funnel with all sorts of regular expressions, you think this would probably be great. No, there's no history. The only thing you can sort of do is just to dump everything into a spreadsheet. You use the data query analyzer. And do all sorts of stuff in Excel. It won't retroactively do goals for you, I'm afraid.
That is a shame.
There is a trick.
Ah.
Ooh, go on.
The trick that I use is to create an advanced segment. So create a segment that matches your goal match pattern, whether that's an event or a page view or some matching pattern of page views in a regular expression. Interestingly enough, that will actually produce the same number of visits as you would have goal conversions had you had a goal set up. So this is not particularly easy, say, if you want to calculate conversion rate, because you have to do a lot of manual math. But if you want to know what's the number of people who did this, create a segment for it. Yep. That applies historically. And then you'll need to export your traffic sources and other types of data, and then do your own calculations for rates, conversion rate, and revenue rates and whatnot. But that segment tool is quite useful. There's a free tool called PaddyTrack, PaddiTrack, PaddyTrack, that does this in about 3 seconds. And you can go to it and you can basically say, here's my goal, here's my funnel, go. And it pulls your data out of Google Analytics and creates this beautiful segmented funnel using advanced segments.
Do you ever find a problem with, because I use an awful lot of regular expressions and really super long regular expressions for my goal funnels. And I often find that advanced segments falls over when you try to use too complex a regular expression in one of the filters.
I haven't had issues with having too complex of a regular expression. The thing that you have to watch out for is A, length. There is a length limit to the field. And B, the advanced segment tool is a, think of it like a scalpel for your data, and it's going to slice your data. And if you create a segment that has overlapping or incompatible inclusion, exclusion, or regular expression options, that can produce weird things. So you do have to be mindful of what you're crafting. But I haven't run into cases where I do something with a goal that I can't reduplicate or model with a regular expression.
I think the shiny new page category stuff will get rid of a lot of my need for that, because mostly I was using it to group page types together.
Yep.
Okay. And finally, the last question we hear from Scott White. Where has Google Analytics real time went? It used to be at the top of the page. It used to be at the top of the nav when I opened a website tracking page. Well, that's all it says, but I'm assuming he's asking where has it gone now.
It's still there. Press home.
Yeah.
Is the answer.
Ah, right,
also,
okay.
don't use GA real time. It's awful.
Ah, right, okay.
What? There are better tools.
I love GA real-time.
I use Chartbeat, and Chartbeat is marvelous. My biggest issue with real-time is that, yes, you can filter the real-time reports, but then you can't put that into a dashboard. So you always have to go into real-time and then do it again, and it's a pain. So, and Chartbeat is lovely. I would also try Chartbeat.
Okay, we'll pop a link into that again. So just before we close up the show this evening, I just want to do another shout out for another one of our sponsors. This podcast and all the others in the British Tech Network wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. They've kept the British Tech Network afloat for over 3 years now. They're brilliant and you should use them. We have a whole pile of voucher codes for various discounts and services from UK2. You simply need to go over to britishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors link. You will then see a list of all of the voucher codes that you can pop in, which will give you free DNS for 2 years, 20% off domain registration, and so on and so forth. These are available in any country, as far as I'm aware, or at least any of the countries that we've heard from people that are able to check with them. So it definitely works in America, Australia, New Zealand, a number of other places that people have come back to us and said that works in. You then head over using the clickable link there to UK2. You head on over there, fill your basket with all the good stuff that you want to buy, pop in all the voucher codes that you need, and check out, and you'll get lots of lovely money off from UK2. It would also really appreciate every time you log into your account as well, you use the click through on British Tech Network, just so we get the kudos for sending you. That is UK2. They support British Tech, and we would really appreciate it if you could support them. So finally this evening, we just have some cool things to go through. So gentlemen, I will start with Jeremy. Do you have an item that you would like to tell us about tonight?
Sure. So at UberTex, we've been playing with a software package called InfusionSoft, which is pretty interesting because it's very, very actionable. It basically ties together rules for making decisions based on analytics data and as well as CRM-type data. And so it's pretty neat in the integration of things that are typically separate and sold and used separately.
Cool. Okay. We could put a link in that in the show notes. What's the cost of that?
It varies, but I think in the low end, it's about $250 a month.
All right. Cool. Okay, Simon, what do you have for us?
I think something personally, really. I mean, we've just been putting some changes to our SessionCam website. We've introduced live chat to our site. And we've been using a tool called OLARC, which is free to use initially, I think. So we've had some great response from that. But I think of greatest interest is us tying up our replay technology with live chat, so that we can actually watch what the user is doing on their session as we're chatting to them. That's been great fun, and that's been a great development with our site in the last month or so.
Oh wow! So can you retrospectively look back? So when somebody starts a chat session, you can send to the customer service representative the last maybe 5 minutes or something like that of what they were doing on the website.
Yeah, we can. As soon as someone starts to chat, we can actually just click on a link and watch the session from the beginning, or we can watch the session right up to the page that the user is on at that point in time with only a few seconds delay.
Superb. That's very cool. Okay, we'll pop a link into that just straight through to SessionCam, is it? SessionCam.com.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, no problem. Caleb, what do you have for us this evening?
You know, something that I've really been having a lot of fun with lately is visualizing data. And there's a few free tools out there that I've experimented with, and I've recently started doing a lot more work with the Tableau software product data business intelligence and visualization. And it is really a lot of fun to take data out of Google Analytics and turn it into these beautiful visualizations and find things that I would never have noticed or found in the data by getting it into a much more tangible or visual experience and mode of analysis.
Yep. Yeah. Tableau is very much like pivot tables on steroids. That's what I like to describe it as.
Yes.
I believe that's a 30-day free trial for Tableau as well, isn't it? You can get a 30-day free trial.
Yeah. They do have a trial. Yeah. So great to play with.
Yeah, they've also got a viewer as well. So if you happen to have somebody in your organization that has a Tableau license, I forget off the top of my head how much it actually is, but you can get the free viewer as well. So you don't necessarily have to buy Tableau for everybody, for just people who are wanting to just consume the data if they don't want to play with it. And there is some element of tweaking you can do with the viewer as well, which is quite cool. But yeah, I agree. Very, very, very cool product. And finally, Matt, what do you have for us?
Right, well, this isn't new. This is actually a couple of weeks old now, but Google announced the release of the GA API directly within Google Docs itself. So previously, if you were a Google Docs organization, you had to use all sorts of weird third-party GA automation scripts like Automate Analytics. But now you don't. Now you can just call the API directly within Google Docs. So if you are a Google Docs organization and you use, say, Google Spreadsheet to do your monthly reporting or to do a KPI dashboard for people, you can do that very, very much, much simply now using the Google GA Docs API. You will still get weird stuff because the GA API actually provides more metrics than you actually see in GA sometimes. So you'll see things like next page path, which is super duper cool. But you will get weird things when you try to do exotic metric and dimension combos. So definitely read up on which metric and dimension combination you can have before you start playing with it.
Okay, no problem. And that's basically the show for this evening. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. And thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming to the panel. Really appreciated a fantastic discussion this evening. I took a lot from it. I hope the listeners learned a lot as well. So finally, I'd just like to say, we'll be back in 2 weeks, and what we're going to be talking about in 2 weeks is the other web. So basically everything apart from desktop computers. So we're going to be looking at games consoles, tablets, mobile devices, smart televisions, all that kind of good stuff. So we've got a great panel coming on for that. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with us, if you have any questions relating to analytics or anything like that, or you have any questions relating to the web in general or the next show topic, please fire them on over to britishtechnews@gmail.com. You can tweet the network at British Tech. You can contact me on Twitter. I'm at Paul Wheatley. That's Paul, Wheatley. Jeremy, where's the best place for the listeners to get a hold of you?
Twitter Uber tags.
Twitter Uber tags. That's very simple. There we go. Simon, where's the best place to get a hold of you, sir?
Twitter at SessionCam.
Great. Matt, where's the best place to get a hold of you?
Unsurprisingly, Twitter. at Matty, Matty, Curry, Curry.
Grand. And Caleb, where's the best place for the listeners to get a hold of you?
On Google Plus, just I don't actually have a Google Plus page. Analytics Pros.
Right, okay. So was that Twitter Analytics Pros?
Yep, Twitter at Analytics Pros.
That's great. I just to mention, sorry, I forgot to say before, if you've liked what you've heard, we would really appreciate if you could head on over to iTunes, give us a review and some stars. Really helps us get up the ratings. We seem to be doing quite well on iTunes just now, so really, really appreciate everybody who's coming over and giving us any reviews and things like that. But also appreciate if you are not in the UK to give us some reviews, because we actually don't have any UK any reviews in any other of the iTunes stores apart from UK. So really appreciate that. So thank you very much for everybody that's listening. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time this evening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we will be back with another web show in 2 weeks. Good evening.